Hi, my name is John Kim. I'm a therapist who went through his own rebirth many years ago, and I've been documenting my journey ever since, sharing my life lessons and revelations. I believe in casual over clinical, with you instead of at you. I come unrehearsed on purpose because self-help doesn't have to be so complicated. This is what our relationship looks like from a nonverbal, visual perspective. No, come on, come here. You ready? Come here. You're supposed to leave the room.
I am leaning away a little bit, though.
Yeah. With me today, I have a special guest. She was almost named LaQuisha.
No.
She was almost named
Talesia.
Talesia. She was almost named Nicole. She was almost named
Tiffany.
She was almost named
Monique. Tiffany Monique. My mom had...
That sounds very 90s. I actually like... I don't like Nicole.
It's my middle name.
No, but it was going to be your... No, as a first name, I meant. Taquisha.
No.
What was it again?
God.
I don't... Say it again. It's a weird name.
Talesia.
Talesia.
It's not a weird name.
I don't know any Talesias. Where are you going? The avoidant, ladies and gentlemen. Talesia Shantae. Her mom almost named her Shantae, which would have been ridiculous. Talesia Shantae Bennett.
First and middle.
I could kind of see you as a Tiffany, but you know, with the whole, but I don't know. It reminds me of Tiffany. Tiffany Anderson. Okay, here's the question. Ready?
I love it. Somebody on the live goes, why are we here?
What the fuck?
Welcome to my life.
Why are we here? I just told you. We're going to answer a question and go deeper. We're going depth instead of width.
Okay. Go.
Also, so hurtful. Why are we here?
Can I read it now?
Well, can I just say something real quick? I think the world expects a lot from people who turn the camera on. They want to see dancing. They want to see comedy. They want to see something that's going to change their life in 10 minutes. And look, I mean, I'm trying, but Jesus, this is free. Except for premium members. They're paying $5 a month. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. So we have a long question to read, right? But it's good. I think a lot of people will benefit. Okay, so.
This is anonymous, by the way.
Mm-hmm. So it started even in my first relationship. A toxic high school one, and it could have even started beforehand. My backstory. If I had a crush on someone in school, I was always rejected. In my first relationship, I had trouble trusting if he truly had feelings for me. I had trouble trusting him in general, that he would be faithful or stay with me. In my next relationship, the man seemed to trust me fully, but if he was talking to an acquaintance at a social event who was wearing, say, fishnet stockings, I would feel a twinge of heartache that he might be interested in her. This was my first long-term relationship, and I knew lack of trust was bad, so I simply didn't give that struggling part of me attention. My next relationship is still currently ongoing as a situationship. The man also has twinges of trust issues at any mention of another guy. I also have never been certain he has been faithful. What does trust feel like? How does a person truly trust without ignoring reasons or situations to mistrust? What is the difference between mistrusting for a legitimate reason versus mistrusting for a not legitimate reason, and how to deal with each of those situations?
One of the things I wonder about this person is how much of this is not being able to trust, and how much of it is an insecurity thing. It sounds like from her story, she's always been insecure with self,
mm-hmm.
right? Like high school, like the picture painted with, if she was with someone who's looking at someone else with fishnet stockings, she's already having anxiety or feeling. So I don't know if it's a trust thing or if it's that she's just really insecure, maybe. And maybe she has not had a lot of experiences in relationships or with being liked. I don't know.
Well, one of the things that they say is if I had a crush on someone in school, I was always rejected.
Yes.
So
that's what I meant by her story.
Yeah. So it sounds like there's a real story that this person has created about themselves, which is that they will be rejected,
mm-hmm.
that they're not worthy of a trusting partnership, that perhaps they're not worthy of attracting somebody who will you know, be faithful, whatever that means, to this person. And so then they're kind of acting it out in real life.
Yes.
Which is what we do, right? We create these stories about ourselves, and then we just move into our lives, and we essentially reenact these stories over and over again.
Yeah.
We prove them to ourselves.
Right? Yeah. So it's almost like her limited beliefs or her false beliefs being manifested. Mm-hmm. Instead of her dissolving beliefs about herself, she's allowing – and usually these beliefs live underneath, correct?
Mm-hmm.
She's allowing the car to be driven – by these false beliefs, instead of her saying, "Here's what I deserve," here, you know, or working on a stronger sense of self and worth.
Right. So, you know, I talk a lot about the fact that we are only capable of giving other people what we're capable of giving ourselves, or we're only capable of tolerating in other people what we're capable of tolerating in ourselves. So,
give us an example.
Using this example. If I don't trust myself, capital S, self, I don't have a relationship with myself, I don't have a connection with myself, right? Which is insecurity. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to therefore be able to also trust other people, right? If I do not have the capacity to hold myself with reverence and love and know that I am worthy and that I am lovable, I am also not going to be able to actually see other people in the same light. So, this is what I mean by
see other people as in how they will feel about me.
Or even themselves, right? And so if I'm attracting people who are also, like, let's say they're not trustworthy. Mm-hmm. They're people who are, you know, acting in not trustworthy ways. It's playing out, going back to what you were saying about her relationship with herself or insecurity, it's playing out because of how she sees herself.
Sure.
See what I'm saying?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I agree with that. And by the way, Vanessa studied depth psychology, and this is why she tends to go deeper. And I think because when I think about trust, although trust is foundational and can be deep, it's more surface based, I think.
What do you mean?
Well, it's more surface based compared to one story, belief in self, stuff that lives underneath. So
I hear what you're saying.
She's saying, you know, she's basically asking at what point is it in my head, and what point should I trust, right?
Well, ultimately, I don't have trust in other people to hold my heart and treat me with respect. But I really believe that many times we are insecure about things like our relationships because we are insecure about ourselves, about the world, about more existential things than that. If I trusted myself, if I trusted that I was held, if I trusted that the universe was holding me and that, you know, I know I'm going to go deep here, but like, this is the kind of work that I do with my clients. If I had a trust in, let's say, a connection to something larger than myself, a spiritual practice. I really worked with my fear around death, right? My fear of loss of control. Those types of existential anxieties trickle into and show up in a more kind of like tangible way in things like, oh, I don't trust my partner not to cheat on me. It's because I have a larger issue with trust, that I am held, that I will be okay, that I've got me, that I don't have to know exactly what the world's going to look like. Things don't have to be so black and white. It's our inability to deal with control. And so these larger existential anxieties then show up in like, okay, well, if I can control the partnership, if I can control not being cheated on, if I can, then somehow it's like I'm convincing myself that I have control, which we don't. We never do. Right. That's why you'll see like, for example, you know, somebody struggling with addiction, which I would argue we all kind of do in our own way. That's my attempt at controlling the uncontrollable, which is life. Do you know what I'm saying?
Sure. Well, but you saying that's my way of control, to me, is their way of numbing or escaping.
In the addiction example.
Yes, in the addiction example, because they have anxiety, right? So mm-hmm. Anyway, going back to...
I think it's all anxiety related, I guess is my point.
Well, going back to this person, basically the prescription you're saying is if you learn to trust yourself, mm-hmm. then you will be able to trust others, right? And trusting oneself, of course, is a journey. It's not something you do over the weekend. It's a lifestyle, because you do it, that relationship
in
with self is a constant up and down, right? Mm-hmm. Like your relationship with anyone else. So working on that. So then it kind of gets me to, say that maybe she doesn't have much of a relationship or connection to self.
No, I would say that probably not.
Yeah. And then this may be kind of judgmental, but if that is the case, then what exactly are you bringing to the table in a relationship?
No, I don't think it's actually judgmental. I think it's cut and dry. I think it's to the point. I mean, I think that's a really valid point. I think that this is what I see, I'd say more than anything else, as a reoccurring pattern in people that come to me, especially when I have couples that come, is the ex, like I go into, listen, none of us are like perfect and healed and trust ourselves and love ourselves before we go into relationships, obviously, right? We are relational creatures. We learn and evolve actually in relationship. But sometimes what happens is, let's say somebody who has major insecurities like this person does, they go out there and they get into relationships, and unconsciously the hope is that this person will then get that, will make that insecurity go away. Then this person will fill that hole. Maybe this person will fill that hole, right? The problem is that's a bucket with a hole in it. So it doesn't matter who you reach for. If you're trying to reach outside of yourself to fill that hole, it's never going to work, right? That bucket is going to always have a hole in it, and it's just going to keep going through.
So if you are listening to this and you ask the question, and by the way, thank you for asking. This is actually a great question. Mm-hmm. And also it throws a wide net because so many people can relate to this.
Totally.
You know, I was thinking about myself and how it relates to me. And I think with me, I think with women too, but more so growing up in LA, going way back to me first coming to America at age 3, parents putting me in a Strawberry Shortcake t-shirt because they didn't know that they were for boys or girls. And then, you know, the bowl haircut and being Korean, the whole thing of trying to fit in, right? The whole thing of trying to be American, Levi's, Coca-Cola, that kind of thing. That was imprinted in me at a very young age. And I wonder if, as I grew up, fitting in meant not only expensive cars and designer clothes, but also getting, you know, the prettiest girl in the room, mm-hmm. or getting, you know, anyone who everyone else thought was attractive, because then it made me worth more.
Validation, yeah.
Validation. And so then one can say, is that really coming from a disconnection or lacking in self? This is the overfunctioner.
Oh.
I am the under. No?
I just won't touch you then.
I was just joking. I'm just joking. Guys, take it easy. I do the whole
flat affect.
The flat affect, the deadpan, okay? And then people are like, oh my God, that guy's abusive. He's such a dick.
People have actually said that about you.
Yeah, and I'm being sarcastic. If you're listening, Vanessa tried to take a hair off my forehead, and I called her an overfunctioner. It was a joke. Okay, so I don't know. So my story, you know, that the me coming to America has positioned me that way. So that isn't necessarily a case where I feel like I'm lacking or insecure, or is it?
I think there's some insecurity in that for sure. I mean, and I get where it's coming from. I mean, it makes sense that would be part of your story, right? And so part of your work, probably forever part of your work, is going to be to feel like you are enough without anything else around you.
Sure.
The girls, the cars, the houses, the whatevers, right? Like, I am enough. And so when those anxieties come
up. Whoa, hold on. So I agree with you 100%. And on paper, that is, you know, that is it, right? But realistically, does anyone ever feel like
that's why I said it's a lifelong process. This is the process of individuation. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about coming to a place of wholeness. I mean, that is the point of all of this, is developing,
sure,
right? Becoming as whole as one can be, right? prior to exiting these bodies.
In a way, so whole that there is no you, which is now we're getting really
ego.
Kind of,
you mean yes, ego you?
Yes,
yeah.
The dissolving of.
So yeah, I would say that it's a lifelong journey for you, but that's the imprint that you kind of came in really early with. And by the way, most of us have some version of that, right? I mean, that makes sense. But your work then for a very long time, maybe forever, is going to be with yourself and know that you are enough, just you, yourself, right? And so when the kind of gut, the drive Wait. To like get out, reach outside yourself comes.
Sure.
Your work is to notice the desire to reach outside yourself to make yourself feel better and is to come back to self and sit with self and soothe through that anxiety, right? I mean, that's going to be the lifelong treatment, if you will.
So let me ask you this. How does one believe that they are enough? Everyone's story is different. I get it. Mm-hmm. But just broad strokes, how does one believe that they are enough?
Do you want to answer that first? Or you want me to answer it?
Well, I'm just thinking about my story. Mm-hmm. But go ahead. Yes.
I mean, I would say that it's through, like I said, it's a lifelong process, right? I mean, I think it's a process of building blocks, right? So,
do you think partnership helps? Do you think giving yourself an experience where someone actually champions your stories and makes you feel good enough contributes?
Yeah. Okay, so here's why I'm going about that.
Yeah, because you're gonna say it
you're looking to that
else.
Person to make you
yes,
feel like
but
you're enough.
Say you're not. I'm not saying you're dependent on that person. You are yes on your own journey, and you it is your responsibility to feel enoughness. But we're also social. We're also creatures who are not meant to do life alone. So
of course, but you get in partnership because that partner is what's the word I'm thinking of. Is a compliment to you, right?
Sure.
Like they compliment you, they don't complete you. They're the cherry on the sundae.
Yes.
They're not the sundae,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we talked about this. And I don't think they.
And so yes,
I'm not saying complimenting.
You should be you.
You're not depending on your partner to make you feel better about yourself. Yes, that's
by
not,
nature.
Not.
You should be with somebody who champions your story. Period. Hard stop. If you're with somebody who doesn't champion your story, you shouldn't be with that person.
Well, supportive,
yes.
Champion your story.
Being
I mean,
supportive.
No, there are people that are.
Then you shouldn't be with them. Why know? Are you with somebody who's not supportive of you and your story? That to me doesn't feel like a true intimate relationship. That doesn't, I would literally tell a client to break up with somebody if they told me they don't support me or champion my story. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes. Not that they don't. Some people just aren't good at it. Some people are, you know, they bring something else to the relationship. And other people are really good at it. Other people are not only cheerleaders, but truly believe in. I mean, here's a good example. You know, if you have friends, you may not think that you are worth it or talented, but you have a group of friends who believe in you
mm-hmm.
and they are like your people.
Mm-hmm.
The level of belief that you have in yourself is just going to rise because of the collective.
Right, which
you
is why you should only surround yourself with people who do believe the best of you and do champion your story. Now, here's what I think.
So then my point is that, yeah, so I said, so the whole question was, so then how do you believe that you are valuable? Well, one way is through other people.
Reflected back at you, of
course.
Is through
relationships.
Yes.
You know?
And by the way, the more you begin to value yourself, the more the relationships in your life are going to reflect back to you the same.
Sure.
So many times, right, when we are in a state of insecurity and we don't value ourselves, a lot of times the relationships around us reflect back very similar. The kind of people that we surround ourselves, right, reflect
right.
that story
right.
back to us. Once we start to do this work around creating that sense of self and trusting that sense of self and, right, establishing that ability to validate the self and all these things, the people around you start to change. Not the people individually change, but the actual people that
who you
are,
surround, who you choose yes. to surround yourself with.
Yes.
So that's one way. What's another way that doesn't involve another person where you can start to believe that you have worth? Because, you know, I don't think you just, it's not about affirmations. It's not about just forcing yourself to
no.
believe something. Because logically, we do believe that
I
we have value.
I don't know about affirmations anyway.
Yeah.
Well, what I started to say a minute ago was I started to talk about the small individual things, So that's what I started to say. So when we're talking about how it doesn't rely on somebody else, it's in the day-to-day moments. So I call them micro moments, right? Mm-hmm. And I look at these micro moments as what I call building blocks on a sense of self, capital S, right? And so every time that I choose myself versus abandon myself, so that might be I say no when I want to say no, right? Instead of saying yes. That might be I speak up and communicate my feelings versus sweeping them under the rug and walking around resentful. Right. That might be, right? There's a million ways that we self-abandon, right? That we kind of tap dance for our belonging, if you will. Every time that I choose myself and I do not self-abandon, I am putting a building block on a sense of worth, a sense of value, a sense of self. That's what it looks like in action, right? So these, that's why I call them micro moments, because in the moment, I set a boundary. It might not seem like that big of a deal, but it actually is, because it's cumulative, right? Like over time, you're telling yourself that you are valuable. That's what you're doing in that moment.
I think also I agree with that 100%. I also think there's nothing more convincing than an experience. So dropping into your body and doing something and putting weight, like for example, like writing a book, right? We're both writers. Instead of the weight being on, if I'm a New York Times bestseller, then that means that I've, you know, done something successful. But instead, maybe the weight is on if I actually finish a manuscript, then that means I have, you know, the ability to write a book. Or so bringing it to
which,
like,
again, is less about others and more about self.
Yeah, for sure. So always giving yourself, like, what new experience do you need today? And then those experiences, you don't have to jump out of a plane. They could be small micro experiences. But constantly giving yourself new experiences, I think, is where reprogramming, rewiring, you also kind of get curious about, oh, what else could I do? You know, and I think also.
Yeah, you start to get traction, right?
Yeah, and I think new experiences start to imprint over false beliefs, old experiences.
Well, right. Because what happens is once you know what it feels like to choose yourself and to not self-abandon, what happens is it's not that you're like, again, let's just use boundaries as like an easy example. It's not that you're never going to like slip up and say yes to something that you want to say no to. Of course you are. But what's going to happen is now that you've had a felt sense in your body of what it feels like to not self-abandon, when you self-abandon, it's going to feel so icky in your body that it's hard to just ignore it, right? Again, it's not to like, you don't have to beat yourself up for doing the thing, because we all do that. We're all going to say yes to something and want to say no. You know, we're not perfect, but it's like once you know, you can't unknow. Once you see, you can't unsee, right? And so you'll start swimming towards the, I know what it feels like to not self-abandon. I'm going to continue to swim towards that.
Hey, let's end with this. This is actually one of the most common reasons why couples drift or even break up is someone in the relationship believes that they have worth and they put action behind that. And for the other person, it's not what they signed up for. The relationship dynamic changes. This is also, you know, how people outgrow each other in friendships, right? So this is why it's so important that in relationships, both people are growing together. And, you know, you hear this a lot, that if you're not growing together, you're growing apart. So I just wanted to say that.
Well, and I would kind of build on what you're saying, but also say that in that example of the, one of the most common ways or reasons people break up, what happens is we get into relationships, and if I'm the person that's finding my validation and self-worth in you, and I start doing this work and in the relationship, and I start doing this work and I start finding that in myself, a lot of times if the other person's not doing the work, that's when the imbalance starts to happen, right? Because then it starts to be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You used to find your self-worth in us in an unhealthy way, right? And now you're not anymore. What the hell?
You just said exactly what I said.
Well, I'm just saying, no, I'm talking about the finding the self-worth in the other person, I guess, is the part that I wanted to build on what you were saying. So yes, everything you're saying, and a lot of times what it is unconsciously is it's like I go from finding my self-worth in you to finding it in me.
So if two people are simultaneously, because finding self-worth, we've already said it's a lifelong journey. If two people are consistently finding self-worth in self, then you are creating tracks and moving forward. If one person is finding value in the other person or from the other person or the relationship, mm-hmm. and one person's not, mm-hmm. the dynamic of the relationship is going to change, which then also changes the chemistry. Mm-hmm. It just shifts everything. And that's when people start drifting and the relationship will slowly fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, if you want to ask me a question that is like this, long-winded, I will dedicate an entire episode to you. Just go to theangrytherapist.com/premium. And if you want to forgo a cup of coffee a month, you can just email me the question.
Because you don't usually put these on Instagram?
No, I'm just doing it today just to give them a taste. So my email is theangrytherapist@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. Be well.